The following recording is a discussion on the 15th of February 2008 with regard to Creative Commons, open content, and copyright. This is a fascinating and wonderful discussion, and you'll probably also want to look at the chat log on the website at the same time, which is at the www.classroom20wiki.com/live+conversations. Or click the live conversations link on the left-hand side, scroll down to the previous sessions, and find the one on this meeting today, the Creative Commons, open content, and copyright. Click through and you'll see the log as well, and the agenda for the day. Thanks so much for listening.
So welcome, this is Steve Hargadon, and it's February 15th, the day after Valentine's Day, 2008, and the conversation today is Creative Commons, open content, and copyright. And the goal here is to help Judy. Judy, say your last name for me. Is it Saltpeter?
Yep, you got it.
Judy, who's working on an article for COSINT and feels that she needs some real help today in figuring out the elements around these issues. And it's a great topic to talk about. And we're certainly glad to have those of you on who are here. We'll get some. Whoever that was, thanks for muting yourself. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's start by just asking about why this topic is important for K-12. What's the big deal here with Creative Commons, open content, and copyright? Why is this important?
Well, I guess I'll go first. This is Jim from Saugus. I think that the key issue here is understanding copyright. You know, we're in an age now where we're changing our role in education from being just merely consumers to being producers as well. And people don't understand exactly how copyright works, what their rights are, you know, what they're allowed to do with media when they get it. And often we found that if you don't explicitly explain it to them up front, they don't understand what can be done with their media either when they post it online. So it's important that that people understand, you know, exactly what is expected of their content and actually define that up front so that they aren't surprised, you know, when someone grabs their content and uses it for something and they didn't expect it. So it's important to understand licensing for sure, and Creative Commons has gone a long way toward creating a framework for developing a license for your content so that you can declare how you want it to be used. And basic copyright law is a bit too restrictive. It essentially is based on a, you know, 19th century model of printing presses and things like that. So it has to do with copies, but in the digital world, since everything is a copy, you have to deal with it in a different fashion, and I think that's where Creative Commons really comes into play.
So what I hear you saying is it's a combination both of understanding the law and courtesy with regard to using other people's content, and then as producers, understanding how to manage your own content by determining how you would like to allow others to use it.
Exactly. I mean, what I think is happening to a lot of people when they're creating content nowadays and posting on the web is they find themselves shocked somewhere down the way when they find that their content or their thing that they created is being shared everywhere. You know, we saw a little bit of that with the popular Did You Know PowerPoint floating around out there. For a while, it seemed like the author might have been a little frustrated by the fact that it was being, you know, passed around for free and without anybody giving any recognition or anything to it. And had it had a Creative Commons license on it from the get-go, you know, all of that stuff would have been defined really clearly. You're going to give me attribution and those sorts of things. So just to prevent, you know, the shock and awe of someone using your stuff, it's important that people, I think, understand Creative Commons licensing or licensing in general and how it works. You know, we endeavor, at least at our district, to make sure that we actually define everything with a default license and put that in the terms and usage guidelines on our sites so that when people click on that, they can understand exactly what's going to happen with their content. If they don't define a license, they're going to get the default license so that they know, you know, what their content can be used for. And then they're asked to specify a separate license should they need, you know, or should they want separate restrictions on their content.
Do you think there's a degree to which the history of how educators have dealt with copyright issues plays into the the lack of understanding here? Do you think most teachers are aware of what's taking place in this regard?
I don't think they are. I think I think copyright in general has been either in two camps in education. There's either been the school districts who are massively, you know, overzealous with enforcing copyright restrictions, and there's the opposite end of the spectrum, the school districts who haven't even considered it, and you know, their people are just kind of running amok and grabbing stuff off the websites and doing whatever they want with them. There has to certainly be a balance between the two. People need to understand their rights. There's a lot of confusion, for example, over fair use and what that actually means. In fact, it's been exacerbated by, you know, some of the education institutions publishing documents that say that are actually far more restrictive than fair use allows. So, you know, some of the most respected documents out there are far too restrictive. So I think it's important that we all understand, you know, what copyright really is and what it really means and how it applies to content in our Web 2.0 world.
Julie, does that kind of play into the things that you've been thinking about?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm with EFF, and EFF is a fair use proponent, definitely. We're in this because we basically felt that the materials that were out there in terms of copyright curriculum were not balanced, were not accurate, and were misrepresenting what's happening, and it's way out of balance. Obviously, the law is about 40 years overdue for an overhaul. The law is not kept up with technology. Still, it's the law, and we are obligated, or at least in California, we're dealing with legislation that says that public schools need to have this in their curriculum. So we thought that we were sort of in the right place. We're sort of poised to deliver this because of what we do. We talk about fair use. We talk about free speech. We talk about, First Amendment rights and creativity and innovation. But it's true. I don't. My experience in talking to educators and even talking to young folks, it's not something that's very clear, but it's being done anyway. So regardless of, you know, acknowledging copyright limitations or, you know, boundaries or attributions, people are doing this online. And so what we want to do is actually put material out there that talks about it in context, that talks about the history of copyright, why it was created to begin with, what the framers had in mind when they put this in the Constitution, and, you know, what's happened from that point 200 years later, and maybe where this has gotten out of whack. But also not just to leave it in a place where it's like, okay, we're in a copyright, you know, dilemma at the moment, and there's lawsuits happening, and unfortunately the folks that have the materials out there for teachers and parents are the industries that are suing parents and children and custodians. So that was another thing that we wanted to shed light on and let, you know, people know that this is something that is going on and there are actors involved in this. And so to understand the history of it, you also have to understand who's got what agenda in it. We have an agenda too. We're an advocacy group. We are trying to put out materials that actually counteract what's out there at the moment and give more play to fair use, talking about creativity, culture, remixing, collaboration. This isn't brand new, but I do think educators are confused, and I do think students are confused. And I think that we really need to kind of come to some sort of consensus and you know, with the digital world and talk about what digital exceptions there are in education and talking about fair use for students and talking to them honestly, talking about, you know, plagiarism, talking about copyright and talking about, you know, responsibility, you know, attribution and what that means, but also making them agents in this and telling them, you know, this history isn't going to be static. You're going to be the ones to decide this. So, you know, how do you want your world to be? And that's really
interesting.
That's the vantage
kind of
point. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that kind of plays into some comments that we're getting, specifically from Scott here, I think. I'd be curious, Scott and Ken, how much does this relate to digital citizenship? And is that the hook?
I don't think we have audio for that.
I could go if you'd like, Steve.
Yeah, somebody started, but they were too quiet.
This is Kevin Pruitt from DuBois, Pennsylvania. I think it's directly related to digital citizenship. When I deal with, I'm not a teacher in the classroom anymore, but I still directly deal with seventh graders in what we call a communications class. And when we create videos or we create podcasts, we are often looking at sites like Flickr for Creative Commons photos in order to help the kids understand that you can't just go to Google and cite Google as this is where I got my information for pictures and text. So I see from a student point of view that the Creative Commons is the new citation, rather MLA or APA, whatever you have to use. Creative Commons becomes a new citation for the rest of the future.
Scott, are you able to speak? Can we hear you, do you think? Oh, I can hear a little
quiet,
faint.
Yeah.
A little faint, something going on.
Oh, wait.
I'm back.
You're back.
That's Scott?
A little soft still.
Yeah, you are a little soft, if you can speak up, but we can't hear you.
Vaguely.
Okay. Yeah, I think all of this speaks to the kids who are growing up in this. I mean, I teach younger kids. I teach K through 4. And help consult with the middle schoolers and high schoolers, and there's just so much confusion about property rights right now that it's a free-for-all. And what I'm trying to do is to instill an appreciation for creative intellectual property and let all the kids grow to appreciate that it needs to be valued and respected. And there's just not a lot of framework out there to do that. I think Creative Commons is a really good effort toward establishing a framework for that. But what is the hope that it will be adopted as a general standard? It feels to me as if it's in competition with the copyright concept rather than in cooperation with it. Am I wrong there?
I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong on that one personally. I think that the Creative Commons is kind of cooperative with copyright. It essentially is basically what, in my opinion at least, what I would consider to be the evolution of copyright in the digital age when you're dealing with copied, you know, material that is essentially always a copy. I mean, if you think about it, anytime you look at a video, you're looking at a copy. Every time you download something, it's a copy, and it doesn't really apply in the traditional copyright framework. I think it's important also, Julie hit on some good points on this, and that to understand copyright, you have to understand copyright's intent. And there's a lot of distortion about the intent of copyright out there by the content producers and those who are trying to hold on to rights and those sorts of things. You know, the past is always trying to control the future, and that's kind of what we're seeing, is that, you know, they're taking copyright to the extreme and going after everybody on every little incident, and it's getting to be a hostile environment out there. We also have the situation simply where our kids are simply disregarding it because the content producers or those who are holding on to these copyright values are making things so restrictive that the kids are saying, well, you know, I want to use this content the way I want to use it. And they're just bypassing the law. And that's a really scary proposition because, you know, this disrespect for the law is problematic.
Exactly. The last thing I want to happen is for kids to grow up understanding that there are laws, but if they don't make sense, it's okay to break.
Exactly, and I think that's the direction that our kids are really heading into. If you talk to a teenager today, you know, you find that they think nothing of going on to Pirate Bay and pulling down a movie or anything. And the primary reason, I don't think, is because they wouldn't pay for it. The primary reason, I think, is simply that they want it the way that they want it. You know, they want to be able to put it on their media player. They want to be able to move it around or do whatever they want to do with it. And they can't do that in our current copyright-ridden, you know, environment with a lot of litigation going around. And that's problematic. And there's a lot of gray area that's brought on by technology. I mean, if you think about, for example, the cable company, right? I've got a subscription to cable service. If I happen to miss an episode, or my TiVo doesn't record it or whatever, did I not pay for that episode? Is it okay for me to go get that from a friend? You know, those sorts of things are really serious gray areas where we're dealing with a copy and copyright doesn't really apply, where something like a Creative Commons would.
I think also Creative Commons is, I mean, it's really, it struck a balance. It's trying to accommodate copyright. It's not anti-copyright, and it really is trying to address, like you're talking about, this idea that, you know, the law has not kept up, and this is a way to bring back the idea of, you know, creative content not as an ownership sort of thing, not as like I bought my house, you can't come on my property, but as something that's collaborative. I mean, someone just brought up the Fair Use Tale, the Disney remash. Or
the mash, Fair Use Tale, yeah.
Yeah, mashup that we actually are going to put in one of our units that, you know, if you see this, it's brilliant. I mean, it's this montage of clips of every Disney movie you can imagine and words clipped in it to talk about copyright. Copyright is, and it's really, this is what we're talking about. And what's ironic is, Disney is one of the most litigious, you know, folks out there in terms of protecting copyright and making it really rigid and backing really strong maximalist copyright laws. So,
it's an ownership issue. They're trying to retain ownership of it. And, you know, you see the Copyright Act continually be extended and extended and extended so that they can keep control of Mickey Mouse and all of their property.
And nothing goes into the public domain. And that's
right.
What we're talking about. The original, the framers had this idea that if you gave this to the creators, this would perpetuate culture, but at the same time, eventually this byproduct, this creative product, would fall into the public domain and get to be used to further culture, talking about culture, riffing on culture. I mean, they didn't use the word riff back then, but, you know, we're talking about fair use, we're talking about free speech, we're talking about commenting, protesting. Some of these works will not see the light of day now because of the super, you know, strengthening of copyright laws and ownership plus 70 years. It's some of these works just won't be talked about, and that's the problem. And that's really, you know, I think about Disney, and Lawrence Lessig basically says in one of his, you know, many of his free culture speeches, Disney basically borrowed from the Grimm's fairy tales. You know, that's what we're talking about. Nothing is completely original. Nothing is completely owned by any one creator. And we're really talking about loosening this up so that we don't come into, you know, having, you know, containers of creations where people can't see these things. We're not talking about disrespecting creators or authors, but we are talking about, you know, going back to a balance where the public domain comes in, where the public good comes in, and where you have this incredible, you know, creativity going on online and these incredible technologies. And we want to basically say, you know, peer-to-peer technology is not criminal. It's obviously, you know, material is going through the technology, but the technology is unbelievable. And what it allows individuals to do, how it opens us up to a global view of the world and connection, what it does for our, you know, youth, for, you know, young folks, for teachers, for parents. So it's really about expansion and less about creating this, you know, for us at least, creating curriculum that is more about don't do this, don't do that, don't take this. If you do that, you're stealing, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
It's basically
kind of
wrestling
kind of
culture back, I think. Sorry.
Jim,
go ahead.
Let me shape the discussion here just a little.
Okay.
So, Judy, I think what we're hearing is that this is a really significant issue. And we're also hearing that it's not well understood. And I think we're hearing a little also that it's not just the youth who haven't understood it, but I'm going to extrapolate and say, I think a lot of the difficulty here, at least I notice with my kids and their peers, is that the parents don't understand it either. So there's not a lot of training going on at home with regard to these issues. And I think the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, you know, tried to address the fact that this is a new world of exact copies. But I talk to my friends, and they just don't have any sense of what to tell their children about how copyright works. So number one, I think we're hearing this really is a big issue. Jim, I'll let you go. And then what I'd like to kind of move toward is what materials currently exist that do discuss this and could immediately be used in the classroom. What is in existence right now that would be helpful to let people know about?
You mean things under open content, things under Creative Commons, all of that?
Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, things that people are seeing material that's actually helping to have a discussion about this either in the classroom or with educators.
Well, that I think is the fundamental problem, is that we don't have that. You know, there's not a central clearinghouse with the kind of a unbiased view on the topic out there, or any sort of a report. There's a college report, and I don't remember what it was, a university report. I don't remember who put it together that was talking about fair use and copyright and those sorts of things. But again, it had a bent toward too restrictive. It was toward, you know, beyond what fair use's limits were. So it's difficult to find that kind of information.
There are definitely things online. I mean, EFF, you know, has various resources that talk to folks about fair use or IP issues online and in new technologies. We have a bloggers' rights campaign. We'll be developing materials. We work closely with Creative Commons, and Stanford has a website. You know, they're out there, I think the problem is that they're kind of too technical or too legalese for some folks. And
what we really need, if you've ever seen like iSafe and those things, which are basically, I mean, we've done a fantastic job of educating students on internet safety. You know, we have sites like iSafe and things like that out there that are talking about internet safety in plain English, and they're resources for teachers to use to explain these things to kids. But these kind of resources don't seem to exist yet for copyright, and I think it needs to be, you know, considered or taken just as seriously as internet safety.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's why we're doing it. But I would also add that I think, and from our vantage point, that internet safety, which is also something that we're trying to work on, is, you know, what's out there right now is a little too hysterical.
Oh,
and,
yeah, absolutely.
And that's something that not that we're trying to say, you know, there aren't any realities of, you know, abuse online, or, you know, you don't have to be. I think what it boils down to is, you know, we're talking about people watching their kids in their offline world the same way that they watch in their online world. And that, you know, the fear-based ideas about the internet are what we're kind of trying to move away from. We don't want to have the sort of villagers with pitchforks kind of thing, but we do want to talk about it realistically, you know. But we want a much more holistic idea about internet safety and a platform for kids and youth to talk about free speech, to talk about privacy, their expectations of privacy, what they can do. I mean, they're the biggest consumers of Facebook and MySpace. On all of these social networking sites, they have a voice. They just don't know it yet. And they can talk to the people that are, you know, the people that created these sites. So I think that's part of the, you know, it's, that's what we're trying to do in developing these materials. But I think there are things out there. I think it's just a little, it's you have to kind of look for them. They're in academia. They're on specific, you know, university sites. And they're, you know, some of the materials aren't bad. I mean, I have a thing that I think that, you know, there's a way to talk to kids now that has to be a little bit more sophisticated. And that's why I think, you know, sophisticated yet easy enough to understand. And I think that people are trying to do that. Yeah.
So there have been some good links put up on the web chat. In particular, Wes Fryer has joined the conference. Doesn't look like he has a voice, but he's at least hearing what we're talking about and contributing by chat. So there are apparently some good resources that are not the fear resources, but the educational ones. And Judy, I'm going to suggest it might be really good to put a list of those links in the report as a start for providing that material to educators.
Absolutely.
And then
if anybody else has other ones to type in, please do, because I'm keeping this archive and would like to create just such a directory. So.
And it sounds like there are really two audiences here. One is the audience of the educators, and the other is the audience of the students. And Julie, I hear you addressing both pretty well. And it seems like, you know, it would be nice, again, maybe wishing, and maybe it already exists, but if there were a nice kind of YouTube video or a short discussion, one directed at students and one directed at educators, that really sort of laid this out, but that kind of a resource would really be, I think, useful to people.
Yeah, well, again, it's like, we're working on it, Steve.
Right, I know.
we have a couple videos that we're doing to complement our curriculum, and that's what I'm working on currently. Is one video would be to talk about P2P in terms of who the actors are, whether they're industry folks or attorneys who are defending file sharing clients, or, you know, legal advocate groups or whatnot, but just to sort of lay it out there. And then we're also developing a sort of copyright do's and don'ts. So, you know, we're using a lot of different interview, sort of documentary style, and flash animation. So it will sort of speak to, you know, both kids, you know, older teen adults, you know, young adults rather, and their parents. It's one of those things where it's hard to I think create the ultimate video of this issue. But I think that from what I've seen that's out there, I think that we have to sort of begin where we have a problem. And this is what these folks are doing about it. Is this successful? We have to ask our students, is this how you want your world to be? But we also have to lay it out for them. We're not avoiding the law. We have to tell them this is the law. And hopefully with tools, with understanding, you can make more educated choices. But we also want them to be thinking critically about this and questioning what materials they're being fed. I mean, that for me is sort of the money in education, is talking to your students about who's telling you what and what, you know, why are they telling you that? What's their agenda behind that? And when you see these flashy materials by Microsoft and the record industry, you know, they may look good, they may be easy enough to teach, but they're not the full picture. They're not an accurate picture. And that's the problem.
Well, it's going to be really fun to see what you come up with.
Yeah, no,
hey,
I...
Hey, Ken.
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, Ken, you talked about actually addressing this with your students or students in class. Can you tell us what you've been doing and what material you've used?
Honestly, it's with the students, we kind of have a free-form discussion. We tell them about the different Creative Commons licenses, what they mean, what they're for, and then when we build, like say, we do internet safety videos sometimes. And when they grab pictures from those internet safety videos, we explain to them that in the end credits or on the video itself, that the pictures that they grab.
Whoa, Wes!
Yeah, hey.
There we go.
Actually, Wes, I had to mute you because there's so much background noise that when you think it's that you won't be so loud, would you tell us and we'll put you back in?
But anyway, with the students, it really is just a free-form discussion about what Creative Commons is, what the individual licenses mean, and how they're applied to what we're doing with that specific task. There isn't an overall discussion about how this is used throughout life. It's just targeted toward our specific task right now. And at seventh grade, I think that's, you know, an okay discussion to start.
Yeah, I think that's great. Hey, Wes, we're going to unmute you so you get a chance to say hi. And I'm looking at some great resources getting posted, and I appreciate everybody who's putting things up.
All right,
hi,
thanks,
Wes.
Hello, I apologize. Are you guys able to hear me?
Yeah.
Yes. A lot of us.
Okay. Yeah, I know. That's right. I have a cell phone carport issue, so I'll try to go into another room here. It's good to be in this conversation, and as Steve may have mentioned, my COSIN presentation that's coming up here at the 1st of March is exactly along these kind of topics. So one thing I just throw in quickly is I think, you know, in addition to talking about the great resources that are out there for Creative Commons and the ideas of getting, you know, the in plain English Leela Fever type videos out there, I think we really need to talk up the benefits of homegrown media. And that's one of the things that I've, you know, discuss with educators all the time is, you know, when we're reusing media that's been out there traditionally published, or even if it's been published under Creative Commons license, there can be issues. Getting students to create their own music that's royalty-free materials, you know, getting them to take their own pictures and those kind of things is really one of the best ways to address this. There's a lot of facets of it. But anyway, I'm glad to be here, and sorry that I'm microphone challenged today.
I know, you actually sound quite good right now. So this is interesting. What I've heard, I think we've heard both from Ken and from Wes and from Julie, is that you know, one way to really approach this is to work in helping the students to understand, because if they become familiar with the kind of restrictions or lack of restrictions they would put on their own material, they become more aware of other people's desires as to how their own material gets used.
I totally agree with that. I think that's that's kind of what we're doing. But at the same time, I see a lot of this happening in silos. You know, we're talking about a couple of teachers here, a couple of teachers are there who are really into content, but it's not the problem really is that it's not so the material on it or about it is not so approachable. It's not something that's just handed out, for example, or that your average teacher can just pick up on. And I think
I definitely got the sense from Ken that his ability to actually have a casual discussion about this would be hard for a lot of educators.
Exactly. So now what we really need, I think, in education is some sort of a talking points kind of a thing that you can literally just distribute to, just hand out to a teacher and say, you know, you need to spend a half an hour talking about this with your kid, and here are the talking points, and these are the issues, and this is how it works, so that everybody can understand it. Because we've got a lot of educators out there who have their kids going on to stuff, and they're relying on that tech-savvy kid in their class to provide them with, you know, technical support and assistance and moving things forward. They don't necessarily understand the issues that are at play. So something to foster that discussion is certainly would certainly be a positive thing in the classroom, I think.
Well, and just to add to that, we're also in doing this, we're talking about teaching the teachers, you know, creating something that makes the teachers, you know, as savvy as their students. And we're going to beta test some of these units with a school in San Francisco in the next couple months. And, you know, we're creating a glossary, basically, for teachers. All of these terms, which, you know, they're easy enough for me because I work within, you know, I work here at EFF. This is easy when I talk about, you know, users and DRM and, you know, DMCA, but it doesn't mean anything to the general public. And I think we have to sort of deconstruct some of these terms and say, well, this is what this really means. You know, this is what a mashup is. This is what remix culture is. This is why, you know, this is what when you see these anime videos, fan videos online, this is what's happening with them. And these are the principles behind it, and this is why this is important to talk about it with your kids. In doing that, we educate the educators, and they in turn get to talk to their kids in a really constructive way, in a really knowledgeable way. We don't want to alienate teachers in creating materials that are just thrown down, and it's just one more thing that they have to teach. We really want to teach the teachers and meet them at their level. This thing that we're doing, while it's percolating, we're going to be launching this in the summer, but even after we launch this, I don't think materials will ever be done, because in true form of a wiki, I believe that these teachers will take it on and, you know, amend them as they see fit according to what students are teaching it to.
I think the key point is just, you know, getting the conversation started. You know, that's that conversation starter piece. So I think it sounds like what you're doing at EFF is exactly what's needed out there, really. It's just something rolling in a broader a range of classrooms so that people can really start discussing the issues that are in play.
Yeah, and also, you know, making this less of a, you know, this is something where we don't know who's going to teach this. Obviously, we have, you know, the teachers who are already doing the more IT, tech, computer, media, communications, they know what we do, but this may fall to a history teacher. It may fall to a social studies teacher, and so we want to have a lot of extensions in there that anybody can grab onto it, but also make it entertaining because, you know, I'd shown some of the one of the history lessons to a teacher, a friend of mine, and she was like, well, my kids would be bored right about here, so that has to change, you know, and so that's the kind of stuff that we're really doing and listening to people who are in the classrooms, because we don't want to just put out another blanket curriculum that, you know, is like not really effective. It is about making this stuff understandable for students, but it's also about making it understandable for teachers.
I agree with that, and I chime in that, you know, it's about, in my view, extending the Internet safety conversation, and I don't know how many of you are familiar with the iSafe curriculum, but they have a nice model where they're encouraging students to really take a leadership role in their local school in educating their peers, this idea that students listen to students, but in my view, it's got to go, you know, beyond the rules of you can't, and moving students and teachers into the role of content creators and talking about the constructive ways that we will use media and publish media and the constructive role that students can play as media creators and producers on the global stage. I think that is a very logical way to extend this conversation, and I've been involved in a project here in the last few weeks on digital citizenship and what digital citizenship means, and the impact, you know, that one student can have on a whole community, whether they make a good choice or a bad choice. We've just had a situation with a YouTube video in our local community that's had some pretty devastating impacts on what the school's not teaching now with regard to multimedia. So I think that this idea of not just throwing out a curriculum that's like others that are out there, involving students, kind of using the best practices that we're seeing groups like iSafe do, would really be a positive. And, you know, the fact that iSafe is out there for anybody, you know, is wonderful. And we could wrap this around not just internet safety, but a broader concept of digital citizenship. Because if you read what Mike Ribble has written and is out there at the Kansas State site for, you know, digital citizenship, respecting and understanding intellectual property and copyright, you know, is a key element of that.
Was that Jim who was talking? Who just?
That was
no,
Wes.
Judy. This is Wes.
Wes.
Yeah.
Oh, they're Wes. Sorry. Okay. All right.
Yeah,
I don't know if there's an easy way,
agree.
As people are talking, whether I can see on the screen who it is.
I agree absolutely with Wes on that one. I mean, that's yeah. Kind of the approach, you know, the building learning environment sort of mentality is certainly the way to go on this thing. You see Alan November doing stuff like that. He was one of the ones I was trying to think of earlier who's talking about, you know, multiple sources for information and all of those sorts of things. But absolutely, I mean, we're basically entering an age where kids are going to just be creating continually, I think, in the classroom. It may not happen for, you know, another 4 or 5 years or maybe even 10 years, but eventually we'll get to the point where we're all using learning management systems and kids are doing nothing but create. So leveraging that resource and allowing them to educate each other and work on these things allows them to learn and to even, in some cases, educate their teachers on the issues at hand, and then we all grow essentially in our knowledge and understanding of this. And the next time that copyright extension comes around, you know, we can take an active, intelligent role in that process.
Hey, I'd be interested, Wes, in your describing iSafe a little more fully. Could you do that?
Sure, absolutely. iSafe is a curriculum out there. I understand it's been, you know, paid for with some government dollars. It's basically free, and it addresses internet safety issues and is a whole curriculum that schools can adopt. And as I'm working with schools on the issue of internet safety, it's one of the main places I point folks because, like someone said earlier, this is a conversation that has to continue. I mean, I say, look, this can't just be this one discussion at this one PTA meeting. This can't just be, you know, one, you know, meeting in the public library. What are you going to do next? So iSafe has I'm mainly familiar with their online certification training, but you can get certified as an iSafe trainer and then, you know, access to their videos and to their content. I would be really interested, again, in just with this idea of how students can constructively create media, to have a distributed project where, you know, we have students in different places creating different videos that address this idea of fair use and copyright, and, you know, let those digital learning objects that are published on the open web find a way to be aggregated and shared. And then, of course, you're going to have some things out there that people are going to say that aren't going to be accurate. So there needs to be a way to point out, you know, where there's a fallacy here. I just heard a presentation 2 weeks ago at our state social studies and fine arts conference, and the teacher was saying, and I guess if it's on YouTube, it's fair game, you know, to use for anything. And it's like, well, no, wait a minute. It's not. So iSafe is a good model, I think, in terms of getting information out there and having a certification process. But the key point I wanted to bring out was how it engages and involves students as really the chief spokesfolks or spokespeople. I'm trying to be correct here. But, you know, they're the ones that are really carrying the message. And I think they are, in many cases, more effective at influencing their peers than just having a teacher, you know, stand at the front of the room who frankly is probably going to feel, you know, very, very challenged. So there's a lot of positives that can come from that in terms of students being co-learners, you know, being expert learners, and teachers, you know, sharing the stage of the classroom with students and learning together about this, which is, you know, for better or worse, not a simple, clear-cut landscape.
Judy, we have about 10 minutes left. I was just going to call on you. We have about 10 minutes left, and I want to make sure that you are looking at this from the perspective of producing some material right away.
Okay.
Could add to this discussion.
All right, so we've talked mostly about the education part, but I would love to hear for the rest of this time about anybody who's got just great success stories in terms of using the open, you know, either places where there's a great aggregation of Creative Commons or open materials that students are using, or projects that are really tapping into it, just some success stories about how it's making a difference and how people are using it. Either by typing or talking.
are you referring to, you know, education resources and things like that, or what are you looking for there?
I mean, in other words, all right, so now we've got a bunch of people out there who are saying, yes, we believe in this, we're going to license things through Creative Commons. Mm-hmm. So are there some great repositories out there of that sort of open content that people are saying, okay, that's or projects that are involving open content that you're seeing kids using and getting excited about, or educators using?
You know, John C. Lee Brown has some great demonstrations he does of mashups, and I can kind of look into that and see if any of that material is available or of interest. But I think you're looking for places where educators are actually using the openness of Creative Commons to accomplish things, right?
Saying, okay, now we got this thing, it's allowing us freedom to borrow and share. And, you know, I mean, I noticed, for example, the Creative Commons itself links to something called, is it Mixter?
I believe so, yeah.
And I wondered whether somebody was using that. Anyhow, if anybody, whether it's Jim or Wes or anybody out there who's already seeing people doing amazing things with it.
Well, there are a number of sites on the teacher side. I think what we're seeing right now is the evolution of this from the teaching perspective rather than from the student perspective at this point. So there's a lot of sites like OER Commons and things like that, which is the Open Education Resource Commons, where people are creating content and lesson plans and ideas and things that can be used in the classroom, projects and those sorts of things, and they're licensing them with Creative Commons licenses. And basically, a Creative Commons website, of course, is a great resource because it essentially indexes and aggregates all the Creative Commons content. And since all the search engines are linked in to look for Creative Commons tags on content, they can search that way too. So there's lots of ways to come up with creative content. But from the student project perspective, I haven't seen a lot that was specifically focusing on open content. I've seen some interesting student projects, but not focusing on that particular.
Yes, and that's what I was looking for, was not so much focusing. I mean, I may be wrong, but in some way, as we're talking, I'm thinking some of the struggles that we're talking about getting good information or whatever, will become less and less of an issue once everybody, you know, the Creative Commons is helping clarify it, and that as we move into that world and really find a way of safely sharing information without worrying about it or whatever, I'm just curious about who's seeing the fruits of that already.
I mean, I've seen individual teachers at that class, at Steve's Classroom 2.0 workshop. Yeah. There were some great talks given about, you know, projects that teachers are working on incorporating Creative Commons. I don't know if there's one central place where the projects will live. I mean, mm-hmm. that could be, that's actually a great idea, you know, but it would involve someone sort of taking that on. I know there are great platforms out there, you know, whether it's like Connection or, you know, places where people are putting their curriculum online, but it's more generated from the teacher, you know. But I think that could be something. I mean, whether or not someone will come up with a site, you know, for students to put their projects on, I don't know. But it's definitely, you know, there are places where you know, young people are actually congregating. Obviously, Flickr is one of them, and you know, they're putting their stuff up on YouTube. But you know, it's still an individual choice on how they do this. If they acknowledge Creative Commons licensing, or if they know anything about it. I mean, I hope they will. I hope this is going to be more and more integrated into classrooms because it is such a great alternative to what's out there. It doesn't ignore the law, but it also expands what, you know, we're talking about, which is basically collaboration and creativity.
Well, what we're seeing here, what we're seeing at Saugus at least, is we're putting together we basically put together some social networking platforms that have been online for, you know, a couple of years now. We only brought the students online about a year and a half ago. But as part of that, we do discuss the Creative Commons license. We actually have everything licensed by Creative Commons. So when a teacher gets online and starts working with their students to put content online, they actually kind of get an education before we create their account on how Creative Commons works and how everything is licensed and those sorts of things. So those issues are coming up in the classroom. This is licensed this way, and this is licensed that way, and this is how it can be shared and those sorts of things. So it kind of fosters the conversation for sure. But at the same time, you know, are they using open content that's out there on the web? Yes, we do have some that are pulling in background music and leaders or headers for their podcasts and things like that. They're all being pulled as open content from the web. But overall, it's not on a grand scale yet. There's like you say, there's no, you know, central repository for such things, and that might be a nice thought, like a
great system. Project for someone to get a grant. Let's say that.
Yeah, you know, a Cricky for kids, kind of like that. You know.
Yeah, no, totally.
Something.
And I just want to add, just to address what Wes was saying before about, you know, this isn't separate from internet safety, because I think that these both speak to one another. And we're talking about using, you know, information and content creatively and collectively, but also we need to talk about privacy. And, you know, there is an expectation of privacy. I don't know that the sense of privacy is different. My generation and students today is totally different. I didn't have a diary that was online. So, you know, that has to be part of the discussion, but also talking to them about, you know, being the agents of their privacy. How much stuff do they put online? When you sign up for Facebook, how much do you click? What do you want Facebook to know? Because, you know, do you know where that information goes, that third party that collects that information?
Absolutely.
When you add all your friends.
It's internal. That's the thing that they need to understand.
I don't think they do. But I mean, I wouldn't have either when I was that age. You know, I mean, that's the whole thing. So to bring it more out into, here's where your information goes. How much should you put on there? How much do you want folks to know? How much do you want folks to use from your information? And also, do you know that you're actually, you know, you've got a lot of power on these sites, because you're the ones who are seeing the click ads. You're generating the revenue for these sites to exist. So we want to figure out a way to actually mobilize these, you know, these folks online, mobilize the youth, and not have, you know, internet safety be like, here's what you should and shouldn't do. You know, but there are other things involved. There are other layers. One of our privacy attorneys yesterday was talking about, you know, it's not just, you know, we deal with issues about government surveillance here. We deal with issues about, you know, individual privacy and, you know, user empowerment. But we also have to think about privacy against each other, because obviously some folks have used people's images, taken it off, and then put something else under it, maybe inadvertently. But it's also becoming an issue. So, you know, we have to sort of create a different, you know, various tiers to talk about it and to let kids know. I mean, I think it gets a little tricky to talk about ethics and, you know, digital citizenry. Not that we don't want to talk about it, but you don't want it to be, you know, a moral fable. But you do want to talk to people, you know, talk to youth realistically about it.
Guys, I just have a question. It's something that I'm not sure I get, which is, when I look at, if I go to Flickr, I go to YouTube's a good example. I go there and I see videos posted, and I can't for the life of me most of the time find out anything about who posted it or anything about the, you know, there is no Creative Commons that I see there. There's no questions about who owns it. There's usually nothing even about who that person is, other than their whatever username they picked. Am I wrong? Have any of these folks, like YouTube, created a way when people post things of asking them how they want to license it or somehow or other employing Creative Commons in that way?
Well, I know Flickr is pretty good about licensing. They're,
really? It's sort of as you, because it would seem to me that as you're posting this information, you want these central repositories of the information to have a real easy way to remind you, oh, you should right now sort of grant credit if this is what you want to do, or just restrict it if you don't. And so you're saying Flickr does that?
Yeah, and I'll have to look more carefully at the actual user experience with Flickr. But Flickr's pretty explicit about what the rights are for the use of a photograph.
Because I'm not seeing that on YouTube unless I'm missing something.
I don't believe it's the case, and I think there are legal issues around that. You know, Flickr's has done something, you know, interesting in terms of having people choose what license they have. But YouTube, it's a whole different ballgame, because they, you know, there's a whole, the CDA 230, which is, you know, a law basically that talks about ISPs, you know, are not responsible for the content that are, you know, transmitted. So you can't sue YouTube for something that someone put online necessarily. You know, there are certain things about the law in which you know, it gets a little trickier. So
well, they declare a license, basically they're opening themselves up to litigation. So
yeah, I mean, so there's a lot of stuff on there. I mean, individuals are seeing their stuff. They're searching for things and then sending, you know, cease and desist notices and trying to shut people down. And YouTube, by law, has to look at these notices and, you know, act accordingly. But, you know, it's a struggle that we deal with here, you know, in terms of people whose sites or, you know, have domains or whatever who are shut down unfairly under the DMCA, under, you know, copyright infringement. So these are the kind of cases that EFF takes on because we don't want the law to veer in that way. We want to keep pushing the bad use of copyright online away. We want to sort of keep forging and, you know, set better precedent law. So YouTube, I don't believe they have any kind of function where they would put, you know, this is copyright or this is Creative Commons. You know, I think that...
they would somehow or other, even if all they're doing is when somebody posted something, asking that person to identify whether it's Creative Commons, do you think that would somehow or other get them in trouble?
Well, they're basically, you know, they're acting as a sort of in between. They're not posting the content. Their users are posting the content. It's a little tricky legally.
They're facilitating the technology for them to share, but they're not actually, they don't own the content.
Yeah, I know that. I'm just saying that if every time somebody were out there sharing things, the place they were sharing it reminded them, by the way, you should announce right here and now, is this your content or are you sharing somebody else's? And if it's your content, how do you want to share it with other people? It might start getting it through our heads. And I think a lot of people want to do the right thing. And yet it's often impossible to do it because things are so vague and buried. And it seems like I would think, now maybe the law's hurting them and keeping them from doing it, but I would think that the creators of something like YouTube or whatever could go a long way to educating people if they had a little thing you clicked on to say, you know, here's the situation about who created this and who has the rights to grant it. I don't know.
Well, I agree that it's, you know, it would be an interesting function. I don't know that YouTube is in the capacity to do that, though, because it's so vast, and they can't confirm every last video submission. And
once
you know,
they do that, they have to confirm that it's not copyrighted content, and at that point, then they are basically opening themselves up for litigation because now they can say that they willfully know that they have copyrighted content on the site, and that's the problem.
Yeah, it's tricky, and we've done stuff here to talk to, you know, we had a Web 2.0 compliance boot camp for startups to talk to them about all of these issues, what to do with DMCA notices, you know, how to protect their users, how to, you know, deal with copyright infringement claims. It's just a whole, like, you know, ball of yarn. But, you know, we're trying in different ways to educate the users. We're trying to educate the companies. We, you know, because of where we are, we're in San Francisco. We're sort of in the heart of, like, Silicon Valley. So we deal with these issues, and we try to give, you know, our best practices for businesses, online businesses. We have a lot of information on our site about that. But I do think it's an interesting function now that's happening where you have sites like Flickr that are saying, you know, these are original photographs. What do you want to do with them? How do you want people to use them or not use them? And that's opening up a discussion and, you know, broadening this idea about content and availability and creativity. And, you know, so that's promising. It's just a different thing when you're talking about, you know, a site like YouTube. It's just a sort of legal sort of hairball, you know, in so many ways.
One of the things that we're seeing is that universities are starting to pick this up as well in kind of a similar fashion to the way the Flickr does, where, you know, the university like Harvard, for example, hosts their own blogging site that any student can blog on or any staff member can blog on, and part of their policy is, you know, we're going to declare this a Creative Commons license and all those sorts of things, so it's very clear what they're doing with their content and points them in the direction of Creative Commons little wizard. They have a nice wizard that basically says, you know, what do you want, creative license wizard, what do you want to use this for, who can use it, what can they use it for, and those sorts of things, and it gives you a license that you just stick in your content. So I think we're starting to see this trickle down into the systems, but they're still trickling down. They're not in the largest ones, but they're trickling down into the private ones, the university ones, you know, MIT, those places, and those sorts of things, and even in ours. So I think as the blogging tools mature and as they start to spread out and more people start to use them, you're going to see more, you know, knowledge and understanding of these things expressed.
Hey, I want to cut us off here. not because the conversation isn't really good at this point, but just in order to kind of establish a precedent to really keep these to an hour and then to move on so that nobody feels that they have to hang on if they've scheduled their day. Can I ask if you've got additional things that you were thinking about that you post them here now in the chat? Because we do have another conversation scheduled for next Wednesday, and for those who can make it, we'll pick up on those topics if you want to put them on now. I really feel like I'm better informed on this issue, and I'm kind of excited to follow some of these threads, and I appreciate the great conversation that's taking place. Anybody else have a closing comment?
No, I just want to thank everybody. It's Judy.
You're welcome, Judy. I hope this is helpful, and I'm glad that you're actually, you know, putting something out there about Creative Commons, because I think that it's an incredible tool for educators and students alike.
And Wes is asking if this is going to be available as a downloadable podcast. Within about 15 minutes, I'll post it on the Classroom 2.0 wiki where the session listing is as a downloadable MP3 file. It's also available on the TalkShoe page, or it will be, and the chat log. I think Judy and Jim are both going to copy that and send it to me since I don't have access to it, but I'll post that as well. Hey, you guys are great. Sure appreciate everything. Are we done?
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. I think so. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, nice talking to you all.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. Goodbye,
bye.
Wes.
All right. Thanks, Steve. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Now, there's an exciting new way to connect with your online friends all at the same time. It's called social conference calling. Use your phone or computer to start a discussion group or just a conversation. It's fun and it's free. Check it out at TalkShoe.com. That's TalkShoe.com.